Its current state on WKAR, prescription drug and opioid addiction has quadrupled the number of unintentional drug deaths in our state since 1999, and we must come together to reverse this trend before more Michiganders are hurt. With those words, Michigan Lieutenant Governor Brian Calley announced the formation in June of the Michigan Prescription Drug and Opioid Abuse Task Force. Opioids are substances, legal and illegal, that relieve pain. All are addictive. They include widely prescribed pain medications like Vicodin, OxyContin, morphine, and codeine. Heroin is also an opioid. Yesterday, I spoke with Lieutenant Governor Brian Calley about how his task force is approaching the challenge.
We need a comprehensive approach to deal with the rise in opioid deaths and addictions that are happening in our state. 10 years ago, this was the kind of issue that people expected or looked at it as happening in places very far away from where they lived. But I can tell you that this is a problem in every single community across our state. And even in the cases of heroin addiction that we're finding now, about half of those cases actually start with prescription addiction and then migrate to the use of heroin. So we need to really view this comprehensive across the board. It's not a law enforcement issue. I mean, there are law enforcement components, but we really need to prevent people from becoming addicted in the first place. That means that we need to change practices within the medical world, how things are prescribed, how things are disposed of, education, and then when it comes to addiction, making sure that people have a way to get better as opposed to kind of being out there on their own and resulting in crimes and worse, even death.
Is it true that the price of heroin is also a factor in this whole thing? Is heroin more affordable and more available than it used to be?
It is extremely cheap, and that is one of the struggles that we have, is that there isn't even really, for the most part, there isn't really an affordability problem when it comes to access to drugs. So there are some drugs that are quite expensive, difficult for people to get their hands on. That is not the case with heroin, and that is that makes the problem even more difficult. But long term, if we can prevent addictions from happening, and if we know that a lot of addictions start because of pain management in the medical process, that there is an opportunity then to change those practices and help people to manage pain without becoming addicted. And in the instance where addictions do take place, to be able to recognize that early so that intervention strategies can be more successful.
Well, just last week, U.S. attorneys from 6 different states gathered in Detroit to talk about the rising use of heroin and prescription opioids. And they chose Detroit because the Justice Department says that a lot of the drugs being sold here in the Midwest and the Mid-South are originating from Michigan. Just last week, we learned about heroin that passed through the Okemos Post Office. Do we know anything about how Michigan came to play such a central role in distributing these drugs?
There is a role for the regulatory environment to play in this battle. And in one of the deficiencies that we have today is that the licensing, even when they're suspected, when there are suspected bad actions happening from locations that happen in Michigan, the licensing of those distributors and providers, laws in Michigan right now, they don't control well for that. It doesn't give a lot of options to close those operations down that are either over-prescribing or part of the prescription mills. In other places, like, for example, in Ohio, when a prescription is given, there is a mandatory reporting to a centralized system to where one doctor can see that this patient has already been prescribed this drug on this day or that yesterday, and therefore they cannot they shouldn't be prescribing more. And so what happens today, we have that system in Michigan, but there's a voluntary reporting aspect to it. About a third of prescribers use it, And that means that many people can go and get prescriptions, multiple prescriptions from different locations. And doctors and healthcare systems are unwittingly becoming a part of a distribution network for illegal drugs.
We're talking with Michigan Lieutenant Governor Brian Calley. He is the chair of an opioid task force. We're talking about his work and the challenges that heroin and other prescription opioids pose here in Michigan. The task force has been hearing from the public about what could and should be done about opioid addiction. Can you tell us a little bit about what kind of response you're getting from the people who have attended?
One thing is very clear. This is an issue that there is a high degree of concern both within the healthcare arena and with just regular families across our state. We had a lot of heart-wrenching testimony from families that just came in and described what heroin addiction or what opioid addiction had done to their family. And usually the story started out with there was an injury of some sort, there was pain medication prescribed, and an addiction developed, and it turned into something that either took the life of a loved one or completely changed the course of their life, and from one of promise to one of despair. And so that type of story, I think, really did set the stage and the urgency around this issue for the commission that was put together or the task force that was put together to deal with this. And so that task force itself is made up of healthcare providers and medical professionals and people in the judicial system, law enforcement, and the regulatory agencies that are involved. We try to have everybody that would have a piece in this, from service providers to courts that want to look at treatment as a main go-to strategy for law enforcement interactions with drug use, as opposed to incarceration for the main strategy. That team is coming together, and based on that, the feedback that we're receiving, we're approaching it with a sense of urgency, that this is something that every single day poses additional risk, additional people that the whole trajectory or direction of their life changes in a negative way, and we need to stem that and reverse it.
Are there issues with people being able to access or afford programs to help them get clean?
Access and capacity of treatment is definitely a major concern of mine. We have put that in two categories. We have access issues that in some areas of our state there are a lot more options than other areas. You know, some areas generally across the board with healthcare and including addiction services are a struggle in the more rural areas. So in our more urban areas, sometimes there are more options. It's just that those options, the capacity is really strained. So that's one category of issues or capacity issues. The other is the willingness of an individual to recognize that they have a problem and want to get better. It's one of the, if you look at the statistics around successful treatment of addiction, the number one factor in determining whether any program, whether it's inpatient or outpatient, whether it's going to be successful or not, is does the person want to get better? And that's an area where there is such stigma around addiction. We're going to have to figure out how we help people to both recognize and be willing to accept the type of addiction help that they need, and when it's socially very difficult for people mm-hmm. to come to terms with.
Some public health advocates have been pushing for the state to increase access to naloxone. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, a drug that can reverse heroin and opioid overdoses. The drug used to be injected intravenously, but now it's available as a nasal spray that can be effectively administered by ordinary people. According to a recent Bridge article by Chastity Pratt Dawsey, there's legislation in the works that would make naloxone available without a prescription, and that would shield users from possession charges if they were reporting an overdose. Would you support legislation expanding access to naloxone?
There are a lot of details that go along with that question. So keeping that in mind, generally, I think that is the right strategy to pursue. There's no question in the effectiveness of naloxone. It's it has and is saving lives and giving people second chances that that otherwise, I mean, they literally would have lost their life. They literally would have died without it. So the expansion of the availability of that drug is really important. I also believe it is appropriate for us to pursue strategies that that take away the disincentive for people to report when a person is in need of healthcare services. And, you know, and so part of that might will probably have to include a shielding of, you know, of the concern of prosecution in the event that, you know, somebody's in possession of an illegal substance. And we don't want that to be the reason they don't call 911 when a person is overdosing. So some of the issues around that get a little bit more complicated from a law enforcement standpoint is, you know, what if it is the dealer themselves that is right there? And, you know, do you really not prosecute, you know, a heroin dealer? So in those cases, you know, I don't want to let those exceptions to the rule get in the way of a strategy that otherwise I think could be very effective in saving the lives of teenagers and 20-something-year-olds in many cases that, you know, made a really bad choice and did something maybe that was really stupid, but should they have to pay for it with their life? And so we need to figure this out and how to deal through some of the more complicated legal issues that surround it, but still be committed to the concept, which is one that I believe there is strong evidence that it will save lives.
Let's move on to another topic I want to ask you about here while we've got you. I have to ask what you make of the state's decision not to allow cannabis as a treatment for autism. Your daughter, Reagan, of course, has an autism disorder.
I can understand the frustration that people have with the small network that it's growing all the time, but it's still quite small of service providers in Michigan. And so we don't have a strong history in our state of having board-certified behavior analysts to provide applied behavior analysis therapy to kids with autism. That is the most studied, most effective, evidence-based treatment to improve the behaviors, outcomes, independence, and success of kids with autism. On the flip side, though, we don't have long-term generational studies to show what is the use of cannabis on children with autism. It just doesn't exist. In terms of if you give a substance to a child in when they're 3 or 4 or 5, what are the impacts on that child when they're an adult? There's not enough evidence to support that. But I will say the particular case that came before the medical board was with respect to a child who had epilepsy and autism, and medical marijuana is an approved use for epilepsy. And that's a separate issue. So the case that was brought before the medical board, or most discussed in front of the medical board, is would actually still be able to use medical marijuana for the management of epilepsy.
Give us your take on the road funding discussion while we've got you. How do you feel about the House approach as compared with the Senate approach right now?
Well, the administration likes the Senate level better than the House level with respect to the transportation package. But I will say that everybody is still at the table, and I'm very pleased to indicate that there is very dedicated and constructive work that is happening right now across the caucuses and across the chambers in the Capitol. I do believe progress continues to be made in bridging that remaining gap that exists today. You know, when we started out, the different parties were $1 billion apart. It's much, much closer than that. I'm confident that we're going to find a permanent, ongoing, long-term solution for our roads.
I feel obligated to ask you about Representatives Corser and Gamrat. If they do not resign, should they be expelled?
That really is a matter for the legislature itself. I would respect the separation or the balance of powers there. That I understand a committee has been formed to look at that issue, and so I think I'll refrain from making comments on it and let that legislative committee do its work.
Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks, Mark.